This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock on this Monday afternoon. Probably the best day of the week for the Premier League Fan Show, as we can discuss all of the weekend's action. It's still fresh, still in the minds of everyone, whether it be matters on the field or VAR decisions that continue to dominate our thoughts. Plenty to be talking about, talking points, contentious decisions, as well as reviewing the actual matches. Our focus this afternoon will be on Liverpool, Tottenham and Norwich. So if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so we want to hear from you this afternoon on your team's weekend. So looking back at all of the action over the weekend, simply going through the results, it started on Friday night and it started with a bang, but perhaps not if you're a Southampton fan, reading an interesting story of a young lad that was taken to his first Southampton game on Friday night after 4 hours travelling to get there in the pouring driving rain on the south coast on Friday night, to see his team lose 9-0. No matter who you support, you must feel sympathetic for that young lad. After Ryan Bertrand was sent off early doors, it was a horror show. I mean, we think Halloween's coming up this week. Well, I think Halloween was on the south coast a little bit early for Ralph Hasenhüttl's men. Then on to Saturday, the early kickoff, Manchester City against Aston Villa. Despite the fact that it was 0-0 at half time, City ran out easy winners in the end. It only took a matter of seconds after the half time break for Raheem Sterling to give Manchester City the lead. They ran out easy winners, but as is the narrative as we go through every weekend, it was not without a little bit of debate and controversy surrounding Manchester City's second goal that we'll talk about in just a few moments' time. At Watford, still no league win for the Hornets this season. They played out a 0-0 draw at home against Bournemouth, who drew 0-0 last weekend against Norwich for their first clean sheet of the season. So not a particularly exhilarating game at Vicarage Road, and the pressure continues to ramp up on Kike Sanchez Flores, who obviously replaced Javi Gracia earlier in the season, but still no league win for Watford fans. Brighton 3, Everton 2, yet again, another game shrouded in controversy to do with the referee, but Brighton winning it late on through a Luca Digne own goal in added time. West Ham 1, Sheffield United 1, another solid result for Chris Wilder's men. They haven't lost a single game away from home. Granted, they've only won one of those games, but they are still unbeaten away from home, only one of two sides to be unbeaten away from home this season. The other are table toppers Liverpool, Sheffield United, making a very solid start to life in the Championship. The final game on Saturday afternoon was at Turf Moor, and Christian Pulisic scored his first hat-trick for Chelsea, his first hat-trick in his club career. Hadn't ever scored more than once in a game, but for Pulisic, after an indifferent start to life at Chelsea, where he hasn't been playing regularly this season, he rewarded his manager with a terrific performance on his first start since the end of August with a hat-trick, although a couple of late goals for Burnley may have caused Chelsea fans to just panic a little bit, but an easy win in the end still for Frank Lampard's side. Then onto the Sunday action, we had four games on Sunday afternoon. The first one was at St James's Park. Newcastle drew 1-1 with Wolves. Jamal Lascelles had given the home side the lead, but Johnny capitalised on a Martin Dubravka error to give Wolves 1 point away from home. The biggest game of the weekend was at Anfield, and despite Tottenham taking a very early lead inside the opening minute, Liverpool came back with goals from Jordan Henderson and Mo Salah to continue Liverpool's unbeaten start to the season and maintain their 6-point gap at the top of the Premier League table. Liverpool 2, Tottenham 1. We'll be getting both perspectives of that result in this hour. Norwich 1, Manchester United 3. Despite the fact that Tim Krul saved two penalties from two different players, it's the first time ever in Premier League history that two players have scored a goal and also missed a penalty. But Manchester United, one of their better performances of the season. It looked like a banana skin for them, but they were very easy winners. Only a late consolation goal for Onel Hernandez, who, interestingly, an interesting fact, obviously a Cuban player, isn't allowed to play for the Cuban national side because he doesn't play in Cuba. I don't think they're in the fortunate enough position to be not picking players because they don't play in Cuba, considering they're not exactly blessed with a huge amount of talent. We'll be getting the Norwich perspective of that game. Are there starting to be some growing concerns for Norwich, considering Aston Villa and Sheffield United have perhaps shown a little bit more than Norwich have? Norwich have had injuries, but do you start to call into the question only spending £1.5 million over the summer for the Canaries? And the other game to finish off the weekend was at the Emirates, and this game perhaps has the biggest storylines coming from it. It finished Arsenal 2, Crystal Palace 2, but that does not tell you the whole story. And I suppose we probably should start there, both contentious decisions and talking points from the game. And the biggest talking point of them all was captain Granit Xhaka. Now, if you haven't seen this, probably worth watching either a match of the day or the highlights on Sky. Very, very interesting as to what happened. He was substituted in the second half, and it was 2-2. Arsenal had gone 2-0 up early doors through Socrates and David Luiz, but were pegged back by two Crystal Palace goals, and it was 2-2. And Xhaka was taken off to be replaced by Bukayo Saka, a more attack-minded forward player. Now, it seemed like the Arsenal fans were cheering. They were pretty delighted that Xhaka was going off and Saka was coming on. Now, I suppose irrelevant of whether you like a player or not, whether you rate a player or not, perhaps not the best thing as a home crowd when you need a goal to start kind of cheering really loudly in a rather ironic fashion about a player being substituted. I mean, for me, I don't rate Xhaka at all, and I don't think he's a very good player, but that's kind of beside the point. But what unfolded over the next few moments is something you don't see very, very often, that he kind of started baying the crowd, started kind of G-ing them on, as if to say, come on, give me more, what have you got? And put his hand to his ear, and cupped his ear to kind of even bay them on even further. And then when he went, he used a number of expletives as well that we cannot repeat on radio. And then when he went off, seemingly slapped Unai Emery's hand, walked straight past him, took his shirt off, dumped it, and walked straight down the tunnel. I think blame goes on both sides here. I think it goes at Granit Xhaka, because when your team's needing a goal to win a game that realistically you should have won comfortably, you'd think there'd be a sense of urgency about getting off the pitch and doing the actions what he did, swearing at the fans, cupping your ear, it isn't exactly the best way to go to try and get fans onside. However, Arsenal fans shouldn't be blameless in this situation either, because irrelevant of what you think of a player, in that type of situation as a crowd, you don't necessarily have a responsibility. You might say that, but surely it's in your best interest as a club to get behind the players in that situation. You've thrown away a 2-goal lead. You should be winning this game, but you're at 2-2. You need a goal. Surely it's the time, if there was any time, to get behind your players. But a really interesting one, and how that's going to develop. Should Granit Xhaka lose the captaincy? Where does he go from here? Is Xhaka's future at Arsenal potentially in doubt? Could he leave in January? If you want to get in contact with us, of course, 08 7025, have it to give your views on that. A number of other ones, contentious decisions, so many over the weekend, and it's getting particularly irritating every single Monday afternoon here on the Premier League Fan Show that we're constantly talking about VAR. But yet again, lots of controversy and so many awful decisions. You think to the Everton-Brighton game for a penalty that Noah Maupay scored. Michael Keane gave away a penalty against Aaron Connolly. Now, it wasn't given, but it was one of those that was actually overturned this weekend. And there is contact. He steps on his foot, but in no way is it deliberate. And also, I don't think it impedes him in any way to get the ball. I don't think Aaron Connolly's ever going to get to that ball. And as I said, it's a contact sport, and it wasn't deliberate. It wasn't a deliberate attempt to impede a player. So I don't get how you can suddenly overturn that when they've constantly kind of banged on from the VAR perspective that there's such a high threshold that there has to be so much to overturn a decision. So they've effectively contradicted themselves from earlier in the season, when if that had been given 3 weeks ago, I don't think they'd have overturned it. Now they feel like they have to go the other way, and it is ridiculous. Then for Manchester City, an utterly ludicrous situation where we have VAR saying that David Silva didn't touch the ball and it was a Kevin De Bruyne goal. And yet, a couple of hours later, the Premier League awarding the goal to David Silva. Now, the problem with that is that if it was a Kevin De Bruyne goal, then there's no contention with the goal. It is a goal and it's a legitimate decision. However, if it's David Silva that gets given the goal and it has gone down as a David Silva goal, then it should have been ruled out for offside because not that David Silva was offside, but that Raheem Sterling was then offside if it touched David Silva because he impeded Tom Heaton's view of the ball. So that should have been ruled out. But yet there is this difference of opinion between VAR and the Premier League, which is ridiculous. Then on to Manchester United's first penalty yesterday. One of two penalties that United got yesterday afternoon. Daniel James goes down in the box under a tackle from Ben Godfrey. Now, it wasn't given, and this is another that's been overturned. And if anything, Daniel James fouls Ben Godfrey. If you actually watch it from behind the goal, he runs into him and actually impedes Ben Godfrey. If anything, if you're going to give a foul, it's actually the other way to Norwich. And this is one that's been overturned. That a few weeks ago, we were debating about them not giving any penalties and not overturning decisions. Now we're getting to a farcical situation. Arsenal had their goal disallowed. Socrates potentially scored the winner to make it 3-2. But it was given a foul on Callum Chambers. Now, Callum Chambers probably did foul Luka Milivojevic. But at the same time, Callum Chambers was being fouled himself. So it was six of one, half a dozen of the other, if we're being brutally honest. And then Crystal Palace's penalty that originally wasn't given. Luckily, in this situation, VAR actually worked for once, which it doesn't usually work. But it wasn't originally given. And it was given a yellow card to Zaha. My concern is how on earth does Martin Atkinson from that close not be able to see that? Utterly ridiculous. Obviously, we're going to be talking about a number of those games as the hour goes on. A couple of other bits and bobs. Marco Silva, three games to save my job. I don't read the papers. I think you should read the papers and I think you should be fearing for your job because I don't think he'll even have three games. Obviously, they're lost in controversial circumstances to Brighton on the weekend. I think Marco Silva's days are numbered. And also an interesting read in the Times today from Tony Cascarino asking the question of how much longer can Gareth Southgate continue to pick Jordan Pickford. I've said for a little while I would have Nick Pope over Jordan Pickford 10 days out of 10, 100 days out of 100, 100 times out of 100, I would have Pope over Pickford. He is making far too many mistakes and also this famed distribution skills that he has, well, he's not actually particularly good at them. If you've got any views on that, should Pickford still be England's number one or is it time for someone like Nick Pope or potentially someone like Tom Heaton at Aston Villa get an opportunity? Call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. We're going to continue looking back at the Premier League action. Look at yesterday's game at Anfield. Despite the fact that Tottenham went ahead early, Liverpool continued their unbeaten start to the season with a 2-1 win, and we'll be getting the Liverpool perspective next. Love Sport. This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. The biggest game of the weekend was at Anfield yesterday afternoon, despite the fact that Harry Kane gave Tottenham the lead inside the opening minute. Goals from Jordan Henderson and Mo Salah in the second half gave Liverpool all 3 points and maintained their 6-point lead at the top of the table. And to get the Liverpool perspective now, I'm delighted to say we're joined by Jonathan Higgins, sports broadcaster and journalist. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Jonathan. As I mentioned, Liverpool had to come back from 1-0 down so early on at home against Tottenham yesterday. But yesterday was all about showing some character, showing resilience and determination to keep going, even though at times it felt like one of those days where things just weren't going Liverpool's way despite their dominance. But yesterday, it feels like a massive statement has been made by this Liverpool side.
Yeah, absolutely, Kieran. You could see Jurgen Klopp's blueprints more and more edged on the team and the performance. And you'd have to throw in the whole atmosphere around the stadium as well. There was none of the kind of doom and gloom after, which can happen after conceding such an early goal. It felt like this was just going to be a matter of time. The performance was brilliant. You go back to Klopp's comments, the mentality monsters. And I think it was interesting, the best way I can sum up the game was just the opening statements of Jurgen Klopp's post-match press conference where he was asking the performance and I was pleased with it, but I expected it. That speaks volumes of where Liverpool are at the moment. 5 months ago since the Champions League final and both teams have gone in complete opposite directions and Liverpool just pushed on and it just felt it felt just inevitable that the goals were going to come there. I think the only surprise really for me was that it was only a 2-1 victory in the end, because Liverpool absolutely dominated that game. And, you know, watched the game back this morning again. Sometimes it's interesting when you watch back the game the day after, and all the emotion is taken out of it, and you watch it kind of clearly. And it was just scary how dominant Liverpool were, particularly down the flanks. I'm a huge fan of Pochettino. Yeah, he's brought some brilliant style of football to the league, but you have to ask, from a Tottenham point of view, you have to ask big questions the way they set up. Liverpool, Eriksen and Song either side of the flanks, the fullbacks absolutely destroy them. And you look at the stats from after the game, and they're so dominant. And yeah, it was a great day for Liverpool again, and this kind of marches on. And you know, it's a 28. You know, so it's only 2 points dropped since the start of the season. Coming in to the big game in 2 games' time in the Premier League, with City and Liverpool are, you know, they're in a great, great position.
Considering the dominance that Liverpool had, as you mentioned, 68% possession, 13 shots on target, it felt like shot after shot after shot. And also learning from last season's experience, does a result like yesterday prove how much Jurgen Klopp kind of wants to win these games rather than just settle potentially for a point, and how important it is that Liverpool do convert these games into wins that actually maybe 2 or 3 years ago, or against another team challenging for the title, a point yesterday wouldn't have been the worst point in the world, but actually against a side like Manchester City, especially as they drew at home against Spurs in a game that they utterly dominated, that those 3 points yesterday were absolutely paramount.
Oh, they were essential, really, that Liverpool got the victory yesterday. It just needed to keep that statement going. And 28 points out of 30 so far is great, but it always feels like you always kind of need more and more, given just how good Man City are and how you know, they've had their wobbles. You know, they've had a couple of difficulties really with injuries and suspensions, etc. But they're right back on form as well, and they're right up Liverpool's tail. The key thing really is, though, you can see that the team evolve, and they knew even straight away there wasn't really wild celebrations after the equaliser, which there may have been 12, 18 months ago. It was literally almost, you know, a sigh of relief, a couple of fist bumps from Jordan Henderson, and then straight back at it. And the intensity never dropped. It was only when they got the second goal that maybe it steadied off a bit more, which is understandable given the, you know, the absolutely titanic effort they had put into the game to claw back the control of the game, really. But yeah, no, it's very pleasing from a Liverpool point of view, and Klopp's team and his backroom team will be absolutely delighted at that. Mentality monsters, I go back to saying it again, you can really, really see it coming on all around, and even around the stadium and all that. And then the interesting thing to notice as well, while if you want to kind of compare sets of fixtures, it's not really ideal, but sometimes it gives you an understanding of the way the teams are set up. Obviously, City were very unlucky to draw against Spurs at home earlier on in the season, but they did. They dropped points against them. And out of Liverpool's kind of good form so far, that's 28 out of 30, they've played Spurs, Arsenal, Chelsea, United and Leicester are high flying as well. So it's not as if they've got, kind of, you know, without being disrespectful, easy 3 points or easy victories and stuff like that. They've played some big, big games and they've come through. And it's the Cup midweek, and then Villa away, and then the big, big one that everybody will be, the whole world will be watching, City at home, is really, really set up to be an absolutely mouth-watering game of football.
Someone who I thought was outstanding yet again in Liverpool's midfield was Fabinho. Since he's broken into the side last December, I remember a home game against Manchester United was kind of his real breakthrough game for the club after a kind of gradual easing into the Liverpool side. How concerned will Jurgen Klopp be that obviously he's teetering on the edge of suspension? He's got 4 yellow cards. Liverpool have got 1 league game to come against Aston Villa before the City game. Do you think then that even though obviously he's a massive part of this Liverpool side and an intrinsic key member in that high midfield role, do you think going into that game, Jurgen Klopp will potentially not play him at risk of losing him for a much bigger game, which is that City game in November?
Yeah, well, firstly, I have to describe just how good Fabinho, give a moment of acknowledgement. I saw one in the national paper, Simo, and he gave him 6 out of 10, which I nearly had to double take when I was having my morning cup of tea. Looking at it, it was unbelievable. Fabinho absolutely was that dominant force. He's been called the lighthouse by the Liverpool coaching staff. But the amount of second balls that he won, and he allowed Liverpool to be so pinned up the pitch because he just kept winning ball after ball, and he was an absolute beast. And look at his stats as well. They're incredible. I think it's 11 ball recoveries he got, and most of them were in advanced positions. He was phenomenal, and he has taken Liverpool's midfield to a new level. And I think the best way I heard him described was, you know, it's always an argument, is he the best holding defensive midfielder in the world? There's an argument about that. You can look at various options, but you would say he's the best defensive midfielder for this Liverpool setup, the way he allows to get the most out of Liverpool, and the way, I keep going back to the way he allows that, how they mean so high and compact, and you can see that by the average player position at the end of the game. If you're being completely cynical, the only disappointing thing to come out of the game last night was that he didn't pick up a tactical yellow card towards the end, which would have ruled him out of the cup game, or ruled him out in advance of no danger of missing the Man City game. He is essential playing against City. There's no other qualms about it. You don't be surprised if he probably won't play in the League Cup game, anyways. That's understandable. But don't be surprised if he gets rested, or definitely at a minimum, Jurgen Klopp and his backroom teams will be in the ear of do not get booked against El Ali Cost, because he is absolutely paramount to that Liverpool midfield against the juggernaut that is Manchester City.
Another man in the Liverpool midfield that had a good game was Jordan Henderson. He scored his first goal at Anfield since December 2015. And what was very noticeable when you look at the touch map was how his position changed in the second half, moving further out to the right to nullify Danny Rose going forward for Tottenham. And Jordan Henderson became more and more a part of the game, actually, going onto that right-hand side. Do you think that's something Jurgen Klopp will look to use a little bit more? Or was that simply just one of those things that you use in-game because the game was in need, perhaps, of a slight change? Liverpool were obviously dominating and creating lots of chances, but it was a way of kind of further enhancing the dominance, but just within a game, rather than perhaps a more permanent switch for Henderson to move slightly further out to the right.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, actually. I think he is quite adept at really playing a little bit more wider. He has that in his locker as well. He likes to get forward. He likes to whip out an early ball. I think it was kind of set up the way the Spurs were playing so narrow, and then Danny Rose was pushing forward. It was almost like he was given the responsibility to push Danny Rose back. And as you said, on the heat map of Jordan Henderson's position and in the second half, it's just like a little red line completely down the final right-hand side of the Spurs side of the pitch, and he himself and Trent created an awful lot of damage there. And it was interesting to, you know, spoke about Fabinho earlier, it was interesting the amount of times that he pinged balls out to the right just to keep, they seem to be almost the primary source of attack at times, and Henderson did quite well on that. He seems quite comfortable in that position, particularly in that type of game where Liverpool were chasing. I thought he struggled a little bit to a certain extent playing a sort of similar role, albeit a little deeper against United away. He was shoved out on the right-hand side as well. I think he's tactically fluid, and the thing about Jurgen Klopp's team is a lot of the players are so comfortable and, you know, interplaying and making slight little tweaks to their positional sense, and there's a whole understanding of the game there. He is definitely an option in future, and he looks comfortable there as well. And as I said, he always has that option of winging it and spinning in an early ball, and he's quite adept at crossing as well. So it was an interesting kind of elevation, and it worked twofold really, as in it pinned Tottenham back completely, and it gave a brilliant attacking route as well for Liverpool. So yeah, Jurgen Klopp would be very pleased with that.
And just one final one, Jonathan. When I saw the team sheet, I'm not going to lie, when I saw Dejan Lovren's name at centre-back, I was a little disappointed, actually. I know he played very well against Leicester just before the international break, and I was kind of disappointed before selection in that game. Why do you think yesterday, in the absence of Joel Matip, that Jurgen Klopp went with Dejan Lovren over Joe Gomez? Because even though Joe Gomez has only played a bit part role this season and is perhaps still working his way back from that kind of serious injury he had last season, I'd still maintain he's the best on talent. He's the best centre-back along with Van Dijk. But Matip, obviously, the form he's shown over the last 8 months, he deserves his place in the side at the moment when he's fully fit. But why yesterday in that game against Tottenham, considering the bad games Lovren's had in the past against Spurs, why do you think that Klopp went with Lovren alongside Van Dijk rather than Gomez, especially as Joel Matip wasn't fit enough for yesterday's game?
Yeah, well, it's very simple, really, from watching Liverpool closely and speaking to guys behind the scenes. Gomez has fallen completely down the pecking order, largely to do with the absence of injury. And since he's come back, he hasn't really, I think he came back one game first tries, had a little bit of a stinker and then hasn't been really picked or been picked minimally since. And, you know, it's indicative really that Lovren, who was completely out of the pecking order completely, was touted as a potential transfer away in the summer, but yet he has come back and he's trusted him. And even, I suppose you have to go twofold, even stronger with it, the fact that Jurgen Klopp selected Lovren against an opponent that would have no doubt caused many, many nightmares to Dejan Lovren. We all remember that infamous game at Wembley where he was hooked after half an hour after having a complete stinker. Gomez is a little bit out of form at the moment, and he's a more talented player, a talented defender, particularly in Liverpool's style of play where he's more of a ball reader. Lovren still looks like he has a brain fart in him every now and again, and there's a couple of edgy moments. I thought he played quite well, but there's still a couple of moments where you're like, ooh, I'm not really sure here. He's kind of too emotional, too aggressive at times, which isn't always, with playing a high line, you don't really have the luxury of doing that. So I think Gomez will come back. There's no doubt he's a fine defender. We all go back to the start of last season where himself and Van Dijk looked absolutely rock solid and looked like a partnership for the next 5 or 7 years at Liverpool. Gomez will get back to that, but he's not there yet. He needs more game time. Some of the whispers are it's not going too good a training for him. If that's true, I'm not really sure. If it is, he's going to have to buckle up, because if he is to play football, first team football in the Jurgen Klopp team, he's going to have to train his rear end off really and come back. But no doubt he will. But for now, he's completely down the pecking order, and he has a bit of a fight in his hands to get that jersey back again.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Jonathan. That was Jonathan Higgins, sports broadcaster and journalist, giving the Liverpool perspective from yesterday's game, coming from behind to win 2-1 against Tottenham. Interesting to hear his views on how Joe Gomez has fallen down the pecking order. I still very much maintain he is our second best centre-back, along with Van Dijk, and the form he showed in the first 12 games of last season where we only conceded 5 goals. He was utterly outstanding, and maybe it has taken him quite a while to get back from that injury. When Matic's fully fit, he deserves to be alongside Van Dijk, because his form over the last 9-10 months has been phenomenal. But I was surprised, but interesting to hear that Jonathan is suggesting that he has fallen down the pecking order and he is now behind Lovren, which is still strange. I know he's had a couple of poor games this season, but I personally don't really get that, and I still maintain that Gomez should 100% be ahead of Lovren in the pecking order. If you've got any views on that, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Lovespot Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. We've got the Liverpool perspective, and up next we'll be getting the Tottenham perspective.
This is Lovespot.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Lovespot Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. Give your views on either your Premier League club's result of the weekend or potentially some of those pretty awful refereeing decisions. We were getting the Liverpool perspective just a few moments ago from yesterday's game at Anfield. Now we can get the Tottenham perspective. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Lee McQueen from Last Word on Spurs. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Lee. How do you react coming kind of out of this game, considering Tottenham were ahead so early in the game? What are your kind of instant thoughts the day after the game?
It's quite interesting, actually, when you look at the reflection process. You know, like when you're in the moment, you think, you know, everything's kind of gone against you. But then when you have the kind of 24 hours to reflect, you actually look back. I think I've been quite vocal, actually, on Twitter and social media over the last couple of weeks, actually, but certainly yesterday. I think the team selection was wrong. I've gone on the record to say I don't think any of the players that have got contract issues should be anywhere near the first team. Regardless of whether or not, you know, they want to be at the club or they don't want to be at the club, we're not Pochettino, we're not inside the club, we don't see him train every day. But that said, Christian Eriksen for me is an utter disgrace being in that team, and I think it proved that. Hindsight's a wonderful thing, Kieran, to be fair, but the reality of the situation is he had a poor game, and he shouldn't be nowhere near the squad, and we're dropping the likes of Lamella picked up an injury, or Dembele, who's, you know, a record signing. We're giving Lo Celso 2 minutes at the end of the game when Christian Eriksen doesn't even want to be at the club and he's starting a football match. So for me, I think that's where Pochettino got it wrong. And I'm one of his biggest fans. I think everybody knows that when they listen to Last Word on Spurs podcast and on the Last Word radio show that we do. But ultimately, I think he got it wrong yesterday. And I think he can go on the front foot a little bit more. It's fine margins, isn't it? I mean, Son scores the goal that hits the bar, and we go 2-0 up, and it's a different game.
One of the big criticisms coming out of the game was of Tottenham's two fullbacks, Danny Rose and Serge Aurier. Is it kind of too simple to say that Pochettino didn't have the funds available to him to replace those guys over the summer? Or do you think it's perhaps a misplaced loyalty that he's sticking by, for example, Danny Rose, who's been at the club for many years and is stuck with him for too long and being perhaps too loyal to him?
I think it's baffling. I mean, I cannot believe that, you know, somebody who's championed Juan Foyth through the whole of pre-season and in the game being played in Argentina, and the fact that we sold Kieran Trippier and we didn't replace him because he was champion, Juan Foyth's going to be the right back, but then he started Serge Aurier again for, you know, I mean, how Serge Aurier is anywhere near the first team is beyond probably anybody's comprehension. And then you look at the Danny Rose situation as well. Again, I think it might be misplaced loyalty. I get where you want to, you know, back your players and get them back into form. But Danny Rose has been shocking this year. He was at Watford on the last day of the transfer window at their training ground, trying to get a move away or however it was working out. You know, and this is what I'm saying on the show a couple of weeks ago and on social media. These are the contract rebels. You know, the five or six players that are kind of in and around that squad: the Aurier, the Vertonghen, the Alderweireld, Christian Eriksen, Wanyama, Danny Rose. They shouldn't be near the squad. You know, we've got people like Davis, who hasn't put a foot wrong, really. And yes, there's pace down the left-hand side or the right-hand side, but where did these two goals come from? Serge Aurier and Danny Rose, in classic mistakes. There's been a mistake. Every Spurs goal that we've conceded this season, and I'll do this on the show next week, but every Spurs goal that we've conceded this season has come from an actual individual error. And again, it was exactly the same yesterday, and it come from the two fullbacks. I just don't understand why he keeps... The definition of madness is doing the same thing expecting a different result. We keep doing the same thing and getting the same results, and that's a loss. And it's another column tick yesterday.
What is up with Dele Alli? Because you think back to 2-3 years ago, and he was one of these up-and-coming stars that England fans were getting all excited about, in addition to Tottenham fans. And over the last probably 12, even 18 months, Dele Alli is nowhere near the player he was a couple of years ago. Do you feel that this is a case of too much coming to a young player too soon? Has he become a little bit kind of too arrogant, thinking he's perhaps better than he actually is? Or is it a loss of hunger that the people have been talking about? Where do you sit on that, Lee?
I'm a massive Dele fan, I have to say. I think he's class, absolute class. I think the flicks and the tricks that he does can frustrate. But I challenge anybody that hasn't seen him live, go and watch him live. I've always said that. I think he's lost his way a little bit. I think the injury, that is all about kind of late bursts into the box, if you know what I mean, like getting beyond the striker. When Dele is at his best, he plays much closer to Harry Kane up top. And I think we saw that in midweek, to be honest. You know, we saw him flourishing a little bit more. And getting back to full fitness, I think there's a confidence thing there with his hamstring. Can he push off that and get that power over the first kind of 2-3 yards because of that hamstring injury? But again, yesterday he played a lot deeper. I know Pochettino set up in a way that almost when we were defending, we were 4-5-1, which is probably the right thing to do away from home at Liverpool. And again, I'll put it on the record as well. I don't want to be too critical. No one's beaten Liverpool for two seasons at Anfield. So it's not as if we can go there and expect to go and roll them over 2-3-0, especially in the form that we're in. So I understand why he set up the way he did. And I think Dele was almost sacrificed for that. So looking at Dele's individual performance yesterday, I don't think it should be as criticised, if you like, as some of the others, you know, on the basis that he's come back from injury, he's trying to find his form, you know, and at least he wants to be at the club and he wants to be there, whereas some of the others just literally don't want to be there.
One of the positives, though, to take from the game from a Tottenham perspective would surely be the performance of Paolo Gazzaniga, who was phenomenal in goal, actually. Some of the saves he was making were brilliant, brilliant saves. And as a Liverpool fan myself, I was thinking, no, surely this is not one of those days where a backup goalkeeper comes in, has an absolute worldie and denies you all 3 points. For me, I look at that performance and think, I know it's one performance and next week he might make a clanger and people change their views, but I don't see a massive difference between him and Hugo Lloris. Is there a situation where if Gazzaniga starts like putting together consistent performances, that even when Lloris is back, Pochettino might not think about going back to Lloris? He might stick with Gazzaniga.
Yeah, I agree. I think he did have an excellent performance yesterday. I think the thing that pleased me most, and I have to credit Zoe Pearson actually for this. She said this on social media. But, you know, the things you love to see is when a player comes back out and says, she doesn't talk about their individual performance, they talk about a team. That's what we did yesterday. He's got the positives of his performance, but actually he just come out and said, we lost. So it's kind of like it's immaterial. But in terms of his actual performance himself, I thought it was excellent. The double save that he made in the first half and the tip over the bar as well. The bullet header, I think, from Van Dijk was outstanding. I think the trouble is, you know, look, Hugo Lloris is a World Cup winning captain. He's our captain as well. I mean, he has a horrific injury at Brighton that we will probably have seen now lots of different times. And I think with Gazzaniga, he has always got kind of a, what can I say, like a rick in him. But so is Hugo Lloris. And I think that they probably just get highlighted more because of the position that they're playing. But I'm a huge Gazzaniga fan. I'm not saying he's number one, but, you know, he's got the shirt right now. So it's his to lose. You know, Hugo's not going to be back in the Spurs shirt until the new year. So it's up to Gazzaniga to keep that shirt.
And just finally then, Lee, Tottenham after 10 games are in 11th on 12 points. Where do Spurs go from here? And over these next few weeks and months, what for you is the absolute key? If Tottenham are to start getting a little bit of momentum and get a bit of a run, what would you say is the absolute must that Pochettino and his side need to do to get on a winning run?
Yeah, for sure. So look, first and foremost, to all the listeners, to all the people from on the pod, I'm not Pochettino, right? So first and foremost, never expect to be that. But my opinion is that he needs to take care of the people that want to be at the club. You know, Toby has had a contract. People were saying to me on social media, he was brilliant yesterday. Regardless, he shouldn't be inside. He doesn't want to be at the football club. Otherwise, he'd have signed a new deal. It's the same with Eriksen. It's the same with Aurier. Not a new deal, but he don't want to be at the club. Same with Danny Rose. Wanyama, they need to be out of the first team. That is the first and foremost. The side that we played against in midweek, Red Star Belgrade, we were fantastic. We had power, we had pace, we were pressing, we had some hunger. And I know Red Star Belgrade at home is a massively different proposition to Liverpool away. But the point being is that we were on the front foot and we were. And it was the first time that we've seen that in a long, long time. And that's what Pochettino needs to get back to. He needs to be brave. He needs to say his own. He needs to think about his own motto. We need to be brave, and he needs to be brave and take away them players that as fans see it from the outside. Like I say, we're not inside the club, but as fans, we look at it from the outside, and it's clear as day to see that them four, five, six players that I've mentioned before just shouldn't be getting a game. I mean, when Roy Keane comes out on Sky Sports and talks about, you know, dumb and dumber, I mean, it says it all, doesn't it? You know, and Aurier and Rose are who he's talking about. I mean, they're clueless sometimes in a Spurs shirt. And I don't think they should be near the first team squad. So for me, Pochettino needs to be concentrating on the players that want to be there, get that galvanise that squad and that hunger mentality, and we go again. What doesn't break us makes us stronger, and I'm a massive believer in that. I'm not down on the players. I absolutely think that we will. I actually still think we finished. People are going to came in for this. I still think we finished third. I don't think there's anything to panic. Yes, we're 8 points, 9 points away from Leicester and Chelsea at the moment, but things can change in the Premier League. There's a huge amount of football to play, so I wouldn't panic yet. But what I would say is, got to get back to doing the best things that we've done and start playing the way that we know how to play, and that's on the front foot, attacking football, and that's what we should be doing.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Lee. That was Lee McQueen from Last Word on Spurs, giving some pretty honest assessments of where Tottenham need to go. Lee's view is that he's got to play players that want to be there. There are a lot of players out of contract or that were potentially going to be sold over the summer that he feels you've got to get rid of them, get them out of the first team. They can become a bit of a virus if you allow them to stay in there. And that for Lee is the key thing going forward over the next few months, is kind of move on those players that don't want to be there and focus on the ones that do want to be part of Spurs' future. Any Spurs fans out there that want to have your view, should the likes of Christian Eriksen just be frozen out now until the next window? Call us on 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. One of the other games yesterday afternoon was at Carrow Road. Norwich lost by 3-1 against Manchester United, which leaves Norwich second from bottom. And we'll get the Norwich perspective next.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to share your views on the weekend's action, call us on 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. As I mentioned, one of the four games yesterday afternoon was at Carrow Road. Norwich going down by 3-1 at home against Manchester United. And to get the Canaries' perspective now, I'm delighted to say we're joined by Chris Gorham, BBC Radio Norfolk sports editor and commentator. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Chris. Realistically, it could have been even worse for Norwich had United not missed two penalties, two fantastic saves by Tim Krul, who's a bit of a penalty specialist. What was the most concerning thing about yesterday? Was it the fact that Norwich kind of could have lost quite comprehensively, or the manner of the performance? Because it feels like in recent weeks, Norwich have perhaps lost what they had in those opening weeks of the Premier League season.
Yeah, afternoon, Kieran. I think you're right. I think there's a number of things to be concerned about for Norwich City at the moment, not least the fact that the goalkeeper saved two penalties and they still lost by 3-1. That isn't great. But they just seem a bit disjointed at the moment. You go back to the opening weeks of the season and the performances they were putting in when they beat Newcastle and Pukki got that tremendous hat-trick. They ran Chelsea close the week after. And then, of course, the Manchester City game that we've talked so much about. The intensity that Norwich played with, the real up-and-at-em sort of style. And they won a lot of friends in the early weeks of the Premier League season with that way of playing. Things have gone south a little bit since then. I think the injuries are partly to blame. I know I talk about that every time I come on, but the injury problems that Daniel Farke has had to deal with have been horrendous this season. Now, though, they are starting to get players back. And for me, I think the most concerning thing is that Norwich's defensive shortcomings aren't a huge surprise. We thought they might concede goals in the Premier League, but we assumed that they'd make up for that by scoring plenty at the other end. Since that Man City match, they've played five matches now. They've only scored two goals, and both of those have been near consolations. Dermot against Aston Villa in the game they lost 5-1, and then Ernel Hernandez with that well-taken goal yesterday. But again, you know, it was a consolation. So for me, it's the fact that what was supposed to be their biggest strength going forward, that isn't firing at the moment. And that's before we talk about their problems at the back.
I wanted to get your views, Chris, on the two penalty decisions, because the way I view it, I think one of them was, one of them wasn't. I think the Daniel James one, if anything, is a foul on Ben Godfrey rather than a foul on Daniel James. The other one looked more clear-cut in an unnatural position from Todd Cantwell. Having your arms that high is a recipe for disaster. Were you frustrated by those decisions, or in the end, was it kind of semi-irrelevant because Norwich were well beaten, irrelevant of those penalty decisions?
Yeah, irrelevant in the end because Manchester United missed the penalties as well. So I think at the time, when Krul saved particularly the first penalty, we all thought that might be the sort of moment that might swing the momentum back to Norwich and get them back in the game. So we certainly wouldn't look at those as reasons for why Norwich are where they are in the table. But in terms of the decisions, I thought the first one, the Daniel James-Ben Godfrey clash, was an absolutely absurd decision because, to me, the first initial contact was made by Daniel James going in with his shoulder towards Ben Godfrey. And I think what annoys us the most at the ground yesterday was the fact that the referee, Stuart Atwell, on the pitch was very clear in his decision, no penalty. And it was only after that the VAR official, David Coote, had slowed it down and watched it frame by frame by frame several times that he was then confident enough to change the referee's mind and award the penalty. Well, to me, if you're having to watch something that many times before you make a decision, then it can't be a clear and obvious error, which is what we were all told VAR was there to correct. So a lot of frustration at Carrow Road yesterday. And it was all right for me because commentating on the game, I had a monitor in front of me. But speaking to my friends and family who were at the game as supporters, it took a long time to make that decision. And they had no clue what was going on or why the decision was even being taken. So in terms of the paying public who go to Premier League football matches, they're being left out of the equation at the moment and often know less about what's going on in front of them than people watching at home. And I think that is a huge problem that the Premier League has got to come to terms with. You know, VAR is here to stay, clearly, but that doesn't mean that we can't criticise it, and it doesn't mean that there's not room for improvement, because not just at Carrow Road, but across the weekend, we saw that there's still a lot that needs to be improved when it comes to the VAR technology. But once again, that's not why Norwich lost yesterday.
At the other end of the pitch, for Timu Pukki, it was an electric start to the season. Thousands and thousands of fancy football owners around the country were running to make sure they got Timu Pukki into their fancy side. It seems like the goals are drying up. Is it too simple to say, Chris, that he's not playing very well at the moment and just going by the stats? And two, are you worried that maybe this is a trend that's going to continue and Pukki isn't going to be able to contribute that many goals? And we know how important it is, if you want to stay in this league, having a goal scorer that can potentially score 15 league goals in a season can be the difference between staying up and going down.
It absolutely can, but I wouldn't put the blame at Pukki's door. Anybody who saw the two goals he got for Finland in the recent international break will tell you that he's not a striker who's out of form, and he is a striker who will take chances. His main problem at the moment, and this may be to do with the fact that Norwich was so good going forward in the opening part of the season that other teams are now aware of him and of Norwich, and we're not the surprise package that we once were. But I think his biggest problem at the moment is the chances are not being created for him. He had one yesterday, one golden chance that I would have expected him to score, and certainly last season in the Championship he would have done. But you know, no striker takes 100% of the chances they get. And if he's only going to get one clear-cut chance a game, then I think it's fair to say that the goals are going to dry up. It's not necessarily his fault. He's still putting the work in. It's just that attacking force, that cohesion that Norwich had all last season and at the start of this season has been lacking. They've not been as good on the ball as they have been in recent weeks. And that's been the big problem. Daniel Farker has admitted that himself. He's been frustrated that sometimes the players that he describes as his best technical players have been guilty of giving the ball away. And you know, if Norwich are going to keep playing the way that they play, and they will do, you know, it relies on people using the ball well. And that hasn't been the case in the last few games.
And just finally then, Chris, looking ahead to Norwich's next game, it's away at Brighton. Considering the run that Norwich have been on, they did get their first clean sheet and first away point just over a week ago away at Bournemouth. So will Daniel Farker be looking for a similar type of performance, a similar approach to that game against Bournemouth next weekend against Brighton away from home?
Well, I think Norwich City fans are looking at the next two as a bit of a package, really. They go to Brighton, then they play Watford, the only team below them at home, the following Friday night. And I think Norwich fans realise that if there's not a decent points return from those two games, then we're going to be in a position where, still early in the season, but we're going to be in a position where Norwich City need to start winning games just to try and get other teams back to within touching distance. And when that is the case, it's really difficult. We've seen how difficult Norwich have found it already to get, you know, Premier League wins and Premier League points on the board. So we're already thinking along the lines of they cannot let teams like Newcastle and Southampton get too far away from them. So points at Brighton, at something against Watford at home, it's an absolute must over these next couple of weeks. Or I think that certainly the feel-good factor that Norwich got against that after that win against Man City early on in the season, if it hasn't worn off already, it certainly will have done if they don't get a couple of positive results in the next two games. And there's a big injury concern about Tim Krul as well. I know it's injuries again with Norwich City, but he collided with Ibrahim Amadou as Martial scored that third goal yesterday. It's a knee problem, and I know Norwich City are really sweating on that one because he's one player they cannot afford to be without. He was fantastic yesterday, even though he conceded three goals.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Chris. That was Chris Gorham, BBC Radio Norfolk sports editor and commentator. He was commentating on the game yesterday at Carrow Road, and it is a bit of a poor run that Norwich are on at the moment. It feels, I think for Canaries fans, it probably feels like a long time ago that they won 3-2 at home against City on a fantastic Saturday evening. The form has certainly gone the other way. It's gone south since then, and the lack of goals for Timu Pukki must be a little bit of a concern. And Chris saying the next two fixtures away at Brighton, at home to Watford, are two massive games.
This is Love Sport.